You're listening to The Source on KSTX at 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. It was 118 years ago this week that Teddy Roosevelt was in San Antonio and he was forming the Rough Riders, a volunteer regiment that fought in the Spanish-American War. They charged up San Juan Hill. That action made Roosevelt an American war hero, catapulted him into eventually president. But what were his days in San Antonio like? We're joined by the author of the book Rough Riders, Theodore Roosevelt and His Cowboy Regiment and the Immortal Charge Up San Juan Hill, Mark Lee Gardner. And Mark Lee, welcome to The Source.
Hey, thanks, David. Glad to be talking to you.
So why did TR come to San Antonio to put together this regiment?
Well, it was a decision really by TR's superior, Colonel Leonard Wood, who was the original commander of the Rough Riders. And the thinking was that they might, San Antonio wasn't that far from the coast, and they believed it was possible that part of the U.S. Army preparing for the invasion of Cuba would set off from the Texas coast. And the other reason is that this is a cavalry regiment, and there was really good horse country all around San Antonio, and they had to purchase more than 1,000 horses. And so that, and again, Fort Sam Houston was nearby, which could provide some equipment for the regiment. So for all those reasons, Leonard Wood decided that San Antonio was the place to train the regiment.
So they put out the word, if you want to join, get to San Antonio. How did that work?
Well, they didn't even have to put out the word. It was in the paper. You know, Theodore Roosevelt was 39 years old. He was a celebrity already. This was to be a special regiment recruited from the American Southwest. They wanted crack shots and expert horsemen. And, you know, instantly, they were the media darlings. I mean, this was all over the newspapers at the time. So you know, Roosevelt himself had over 6,000 applications, you know, for a 1,000-man regiment. Each territory was given a quota they had to raise, and literally overnight they filled their quotas. And so these men came from Arizona, New Mexico, Oklahoma Territory, and Indian Territory. But, of course, TR had buddies, you know, and so we had polo players and tennis champions and Yale grads and Princeton grads and Harvard grads who joined up with the regiment as well.
Because the TR was a Harvard man. And so when they got to San Antonio, where did they congregate? I mean, we hear up all the time about TR putting together the Rough Riders at the Menger Hotel. Is that true?
Right. No, he didn't. Now, he did stay just briefly at the Menger, and there's a guest book that has his signature in it and Leonard Wood's. But they trained and they stayed at Riverside Park, which is now the Riverside Golf Course. And I was there a few years ago researching my book. There's a nice little monument along the road there next to the park that honors the Spanish-American War volunteers. But they picked Riverside Park because there was plenty of ground for training. You know, they had, you know, 1,000 men on horses. They needed lots of room. But also, that was the location of the international fairgrounds, and there were several buildings there. So, you know, initially the men didn't have tents. I mean, they didn't have any equipment at all. So they put up in some of these big buildings, pavilions, there at the fairgrounds.
These were volunteers. So who supplied the uniforms and the weaponry and all that?
Oh, that's an excellent question. So the U.S. government, the U.S. Army, was responsible for supplying arms, equipment, and uniforms for the enlisted men. But officers, they were responsible, and this was the same in the regular Army, they were responsible for purchasing their own uniforms and equipment and horses. So TR shows up in San Antonio in early May 1898 wearing a uniform that was crafted by Brooks Brothers of New York.
And I guess he was the only one who had such a fancy uniform. Did that stick out?
Well, it was tailored to be, you know, within the regulations. But I'll tell you, he was one of the few who had khaki for his uniform. The U.S. Army had just adopted khaki as this summer uniform, but it really hadn't been issued yet. So most of the men of the Rough Riders were issued woolen shirts, woolen jackets, wool trousers. They had a heavier canvas, but they did not have the khaki. So Wood had khaki, Roosevelt had khaki. So these weren't outlandish uniforms. It was just that they had a type of material much more suitable for campaigning in Cuba in the summer.
Was there a Roosevelt mania happening in San Antonio at the time, or Rough Rider mania? People just go out there and watch them?
It was both. Yeah, it was both. I mean, Roosevelt was a celebrity, and the San Antonio newspapers really wrote about him, and you know, they were very they really credited him for you know, his doing his duty, but also the fact that, you know, he had published several books by then. He had just resigned his position as Assistant Secretary of the Navy to become a volunteer. He had spent time in the West in ranches in North Dakota, and so he had already led an incredible life at the age of 39. So he was a big draw. But this whole idea of these Westerners and cowboys and you know, a lot of the public thought they would be ruffians and uncontrollable and were kind of afraid of them. But everybody wanted to get a look, and so those first few days, record crowds. In fact, some of the articles said more than 10,000 people came to the fairgrounds to see this unusual regiment of Rough Riders.
And so, although Teddy Roosevelt was the assistant of the Secretary of the Navy, the actual Secretary of the Navy was ill most of the time, so he pretty much stepped forward and was very present and also a very much a cheerleader for trying to get the United States involved into freeing Cuba, Cuba Libre.
That's absolutely correct. Any time Secretary Long was absent, Roosevelt was right there and keeping tabs on things happening in the Pacific and the Atlantic. He was making sure there was coal tenders in the various ports so that the Navy would have plenty of coal ready and available if there was a war. And, you know, Roosevelt had very strong feelings about Cuba and Spain. He felt that Spain was an archaic, you know, a relic that didn't need to be in the New World, didn't need to have a colony there. And actually, thousands of Cubans were dying of starvation because of these concentration camps that had been set up by the Spaniards. So there was a lot of sympathy in the United States for this cause. So Roosevelt had supported the war, and that's one of the reasons why he joins up. He explained that, you know, I really pushed for this war, and I don't think I should push for a war then sit back and let somebody else fight. I pushed for it, and I feel that it's my duty to go and fight as well.
But he was a bureaucrat from Washington, D.C., although he was had been a cattleman in the Dakotas and was the commissioner of police in New York City. He had a colorful history. Still, he had to be able to command all of these Rough Riders. Many of them were cowboys, and they needed someone an alpha male they could look up to.
Yeah, and there's a great story about that. So that's why Roosevelt, he was offered the colonelcy, the command of the regiment, and he turned it down. He told the Secretary of War that he needed a few weeks to get, you know, acclimated, to learn the drills, and he just wasn't comfortable commanding a regiment. And he recommended his friend, Captain Leonard Wood, and he said, if you make Captain Leonard Wood the colonel, I'll become lieutenant colonel, and I'll learn under him. And, you know, Roosevelt once said, I put myself in the way of things happening, and they happened. So later in Cuba, when Wood is bumped up, Roosevelt gets command of the regiment just before the Battle of San Juan Heights and leads his regiment to victory.
All right, so we're going to talk more about the Rough Riders, Teddy Roosevelt, his cowboy regiment, and his immortal charge up San Juan Hill. That's the name of the book. We're speaking with Mark Lee Gardner. He's the author, and he's also written about other Wild West events. If you've got a question, call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies, talking about Teddy Roosevelt. The book is Rough Riders, Teddy Roosevelt, His Cowboy Regiment, and His Immortal Charge Up San Juan Hill. But before San Juan, he was in San Antonio. The author of the book is Mark Lee Gardner. And so, Mark, let me ask you about the events leading up to the war, and that is the explosion of the Maine and the ongoing controversy. I don't think settled about, was that an attack by the Spanish? Was this just a boiler that blew up?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We still don't know with certainty, and I don't know that we ever will. Now, this explosion happened in February of 1898. 266 American officers and men lost their lives. You know, the Maine was in Havana Harbor because there had been some anti-American demonstrations, and the Maine had come down there on what was called a friendly visit, but it was still provocative that this American gunboat was there in Cuba. And immediately after the explosion, a lot of Americans assumed that it was the Spaniards. And the Navy put together an investigative team and their report came back in April. They didn't say who did it, but they did say it had been caused by an external device, like a submarine mine of some kind. And so that just flamed, you know, that inflamed people because, again, they jumped to the conclusion, well, of course, it was the Spanish. And then the sinking of the Maine combined with the atrocities that had been going on and the Cubans' long, years-long struggle for freedom eventually forced President McKinley's hand, and the war is declared at the end of April 1898.
And we also had a yellow journalism making sure that the Americans knew about that or maybe even exaggerating some of the atrocities.
Oh, sure. I mean, there was front pages when the Maine sank, and most all the newspapers blamed the Spaniards. It was the Spaniards that had caused this. And, you know, when these men are joining up, the vast majority of the Rough Riders, they weren't really joining up to help the Cubans or to end the atrocities. Their motto was, "Avenge the Maine. We remember the Maine."
Let's go to the phone lines. We had a caller, but we lost a caller. The phone lines are open if you want to call in. The number is 210-614-8980 if you've got a comment or question. So we had the Maine blow up. We had this fervor in the United States to avenge the Maine and also free Cuba from the Spanish. But wasn't there also a tinge of land grabbiness as well? Cuba was right there, 50 miles off the coast of Florida. That would make a sweet place for another state.
Well, it would, but, you know, part of the legislation that allowed this war, it actually specifically prevented the United States from acquiring Cuba in any way. Now, that doesn't mean that the United States couldn't have some kind of paternalistic relationship, which they did for many years, but Congress made sure that this war was not going to end up in a land grab, at least as far as Cuba was concerned.
And we also benefited with the Philippines.
Exactly, yes. That was different. There was no legislation about the Philippines, I don't think.
Right. So that's the United States occupied the Philippines for quite a while, and that was
also
a part of American history that needs a close examination. So
it was very brutal what was going on over there. And there have been some recent books that are pretty darn good that discuss that.
So Teddy Roosevelt, he has ice water in his veins. How does he goes into the San Juan Hill and Kettle Hill and these charges, and he really wants to be in the thick of it. He wants to feel those bullets whizzing past his ears.
Yes, he does. You know, he had grown up as a boy during the Civil War, and those leaders from the Civil War were almost like gods to the men after. I mean, you know, legends like Grant. I mean, Grant becomes president, but Grant and Sherman and Sheridan, they were revered, and also the Confederate leaders as well, you know, Jackson and Lee, Jeb Stuart. And a lot of the young men of the 1890s, you know, they'd grown up, you know, seeing the hero worship, seeing the parades, seeing the monument dedications on the battlefields, and they didn't have a war. You know, they felt like they had missed out, and all of a sudden, the Spanish-American War was their opportunity for not only for them to experience battle, but also their chance to earn laurels, to earn the glory that their heroes had received. So, and Roosevelt was, you know, even though he's 39, he was exactly the same way. He thirsted for the battlefield experience. He wanted to see a Spanish flag on a battlefield, and yes.
And like Stephen Crane, a contemporary writer, and he also went to cover the Spanish-American War, and he wrote the Red Badge of Courage. All this, it wasn't just a TR, this was the mood of the nation.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that surprises people is that, you know, a lot of times the Rough Riders, and this happened even historically, it was like they were the only ones down there. Well, there were tens of thousands of men in the United States that rushed to enlist. I mean, they had way more many men, you know, over 100,000 men rushed to enlist. They were eager, anxious, and they were all afraid that they were going to miss the war, that it would be over. And this is one of those cases where if you weren't at the very beginning, you did miss it because it was over in about 4.5 months for the Rough Riders.
Before I forget, I want to ask you about the armaments that the Rough Riders had. What kind of rifles did they have?
Well, because they had Leonard Wood, who was very close to President McKinley and the Secretary of War, he was actually their physician, and because of Roosevelt, they had connections in the Capitol. And while Leonard Wood went to San Antonio fairly early, Roosevelt stayed behind to get all the requisitions in order, and so they were able to get the most modern arm carbine, the same one that was being used by the U.S. Cavalry, and that was the Krag Jorgensen carbine that fired a 30-40 round. Most of the volunteer units, the government gave them the same types of guns that Custer's men carried at the Little Bighorn. They were trapdoor Springfields, and they fired black powder. But the Krag Jorgensens fired smokeless powder, so they were very accurate, and they were very fortunate. They were one of the few, if not the only, volunteer cavalry regiment to receive those weapons.
Black powder gave away your position to the
exactly.
enemy. You didn't want that.
It also I'm sorry, go ahead.
So you go ahead.
Well, it gave away your position, and it's also, it creates lots of, it's just hard to see through. You know, you've got several weapons firing together. So, yes, several disadvantages to the black powder.
The Spanish had better arms.
They did. They had the Mauser. It was a much, they were able to fire the Mauser. The Mauser actually was a faster bullet, and it also could be fired more rapidly. They were both bolt actions, both the Krag Jorgensen and the Mauser. But the Mauser had a system using what was called a stripper clip, where you had a number of rounds already in this clip, and you set it on top of your gun and pushed them down, and they were loaded, and you're ready to go. Whereas the Krag had like a box magazine on the side, and you had to drop your cartridges in, and you could kind of drop them on the ground or your fumble fingers, and it could be a little awkward in the heat of battle. So the Spaniards had advantages definitely in their armament.
And what did TR wear on his hip? Is it true that it was salvaged from the Maine?
That's absolutely true. He had a Colt revolver, model 1892 and 38 caliber, that had been salvaged from the USS Maine. So he was going to personally avenge the Maine, and indeed, he killed a man, a Spaniard, on top of Kettle Hill, just yards from him. And he was so proud of that. He wrote to a friend. He says, "Did I tell you that I killed a Spaniard with my own hand?"
We talk about the bravery and the great accomplishments, but at times it seemed like it was F Troop with all of the comedy of errors.
Oh, there are tons of errors, mismanagement, disorganization. Very frustrating for Roosevelt. I frequently look at his diary, and most of the pages are filled with complaints about how the war is being handled. And, you know, but on the other hand, it allowed for individual heroics. Even during this big battle on July 1st, 1898, the commanding general, William Shafter, is so ill. He's overweight, weighs over 300 pounds, and has suffered from gout. So his orders aren't really getting communicated rapidly, and it ends up being a bit of a free-for-all, and Roosevelt kind of, you know, starts the movement or charge of the cavalry division on Kettle Hill. And he wrote later, he said this was really kind of a captain's or even a lieutenant's battle because it's individual squads and groups of men who are acting on their own initiative, and Roosevelt became a hero because of that.
So he, when he comes back, he's given a hero's welcome in New York, and they just love him, and it's big newspapers stuff, and he turns that into a political power. And where does he go from
yeah.
there?
Yes, I mean, even when he was still in Cuba, he has not returned to the United States yet. This is in early August. His name is already being put forward to run for governor of New York, and the election's that November. You know, now people are running for office, you know, 3 or 4 years ahead of time. Well, you know, all of a sudden, November, he's on the ticket, and he becomes the governor of New York. And because of the national spotlight that was cast upon him, and I should point out, I mean, he earned those laurels. He indeed was a brave man in the different encounters that they had in Cuba. He did go above and beyond the call of duty. So, but a lot of regular Army men, officers, it rankled them that the Rough Riders got so much attention. It wasn't their fault. But there were also lots of other brave men who fought and died on San Juan Hill who weren't recognized by the media.
Roosevelt knew how to court the press, and
that's
an attribute that he was able to use through his entire life, especially in the White House.
Oh yes, and you know Roosevelt looked at the press as his direct communication with the people. He never turned down, well, I may be exaggerating. I don't think he ever turned down an interview. So the press loved him. For that.
And so I know when he was running for president, he had some former Rough Riders show up all across the country, speak for him. One of them said he was a great leader. He led us like lambs to the slaughter, which was a poor choice of words, but we get where he was going with that.
Yeah. Well, you know, he was so loyal, and his men loved him, dearly loved him. he inspired them. And he remained loyal to his men for the rest of his life, and if he could help them out in any way, I mean, he made some of his men, he appointed them governors of Arizona, New Mexico, and Oklahoma. He gave, you know, postmaster positions. If he could help them and he felt they were worthy, he stuck by him, and he would recommend them, and they remained close, although his wife, she once wrote, she says, sometimes we felt like we were the parents of 1,000 very bad children.
All right. Theodore Roosevelt, the Rough Riders, his cowboy regiment, and the immortal charge up San Juan Hill. Before San Juan, there was San Antonio, made a stop here, got organized here, and they went on to fight. And the author of the book is Mark Lee Gardner. Mark Lee, thank you so much. Great talking with you.
Thank you. I like talking about TR. Appreciate it.
All right. And this is The Source on KSTX. Thanks for listening.